President Emmanuel Macron is not unique among French leaders in entertaining grandiose notions about his country's singular place in the world. Charles de Gaulle believed that France cannot be France without greatness and wrote of its exalted and exceptional destiny. For Napoleon, the word impossible is not French. Emmanuel Macron is a banker by background rather than a warrior, but he seems to share with his swashbuckling predecessors the conviction that France is a great power and should behave like one. In recent months alone, Macron has met with the democratic opposition leaders of Belarus, dispatched warships and fighter jets to Greece as it butts heads with Turkey, and perhaps most startlingly, invited himself to Lebanon within 48 hours of the warehouse explosion which devastated Beirut in August. All of which is to say nothing of France's outreach, economic and military, to its former colonies in West Africa. Last month, Macron told the UN General Assembly that the world as it is today cannot come down to a rivalry between China and the United States. Macron appears to have a firm idea of at least one other nation deserving of a seat at the top table. But what does Emmanuel Macron see as France's role and the reasons that France should play it? This is the Foreign Desk.
Besides his tremendous self-confidence and self-belief, an attempt to explain Macron's stand in foreign affairs is to look at the way he sort of positions himself very much in line with this traditional French way of seeing the world and seeing the place of France in the world, I think, which again comes, from Charles de Gaulle. And this is typically French.
I'm here to bring help. We will launch a European and international initiative to bring money and help directly to people. To change in depth what is today at stake, because all this fear,
anger.
This anxiety,
real
this anger.
Anger
you have is against politicians.
He does have something of a track record at home of being able to persuade people, but I do think in it, particularly when you look at foreign policy, it's a valid question, and it's important to understand the way in which, you know, he persists, he keeps going, he's never quite given up that hope that he might be able to be the one to persuade a foreign leader to behave in a different way.
Hello and welcome to The Foreign Desk. I'm Andrew Muller. My guests today are Sophie Pedder and Philippe Malier. Philippe Malier is a professor of French and European politics at University College London, and Sophie Pedder is Paris bureau chief for The Economist and author of Revolution Française, Emmanuel Macron and the Quest to Reinvent a Nation. Sophie, I'll start with you. Is there a way you can define Emmanuel Macron's broad foreign policy vision? Is there a Macron doctrine?
Well, I think I would start by putting it in the context of Europe and how he sees France in Europe and Europe in the world. I think that that's his starting point. I think that he sees the rise of China as a world power, the disengagement, or at least the sort of volatility of the United States, on the other hand, and the need for Europe to exist as a geopolitical force in the world in the face of this. And then he sort of situates that in the sense of the sort of instability in the immediate neighbourhood around Europe, Turkey, Middle East, etc. And I think that everything that he's been trying to do in Europe is about reinforcing Europe's ability to act as a strategic player in the world. And he sees that in a very traditional French way, I think, as Europe as an amplifier of the French voice. You know, in Britain, we often find that quite difficult to understand. But in France, it's absolutely standard foreign policy doctrine is that Europe is a way in which France can amplify its voice and be heard in the world. So I think, you know, everything that Macron has done, and some of it is controversial, some of it less so, is about, to my mind, strengthening Europe on the basis of the Franco-German relationship and making Europe a sovereign, geostrategic and increasingly autonomous player in the face of the sort of shifting world order as we see it.
Philippe, do you think it's all that straightforward and that utilitarian even? Or do you think Macron perceives that there's some sort of French values underpinning his foreign policy outlook that he wants to project to the world?
I think there's always a mix of ideas, idealism, I would even say, or ideology, I think, because I think it's a bit too piecemeal to call it a doctrine, but ideas for sure. And of course, also the other part, the other side is what's best for France, you know, because of course, a statesman and the president of a country such as France doesn't do it just for purely altruistic reasons when he goes to some foreign countries or propose some help. It's also how best serve the French interests. And I agree with Sophie. I think that it's a traditional French way, at least since De Gaulle, to use the EU really as a way to amplify France's political weight. I would even say I think the critics in France and outside of France stress that with Macron, Macron punches above its weight and France's political weight in the world by doing what he does, because of course his undertaking, we're going to discuss that, I'm sure, he's been seen to take an interest in various parts of the world and very intricate, very complex issues. And I think that's probably a departure with his predecessors.
Sophie, Macron, as you will obviously know better than most people, having literally written the book, is not generally a man who comes across as lacking in confidence in his own abilities. How much of his foreign policy outlook and his foreign policy projection is based on a belief in himself as somebody able to accomplish things on the world stage?
Well, it's an interesting one, this one. And I think, you know, foreign policy analysts don't like to personalise or over-personalise international relations. But I think in Macron's case, it's worth at least looking at the way he has tried to play some of the fellow world leaders since he was elected. If you think back to 2017, when he first took office, the first meeting with Donald Trump, do you remember the knuckle-crunching handshake? If you think back to the first time he welcomed Vladimir Putin to Versailles, this was, you know, extraordinarily sort of grand setting, a former royal palace to welcome the Russian leader. It was, I think, all about trying to use a form of flattery, a form of sort of personal chemistry in order to try and bring pressure to bear on foreign leaders. Now, that has had mixed effect, and those two examples are good ones because I'm not sure it's actually very easy to point to anything much that Macron has been able to extract from Trump 3.5 years down the line, and from Putin as well. It's been an extremely mixed pattern. But I think that it is very much part of who Emmanuel Macron is, that he does believe in his powers of persuasion on the global stage, but at home as well. He created this party from nothing in a matter of 12 months and against all the odds, you know, persuaded people to vote for him, raise money for him, stand for election for him. So, you know, he does have something of a track record at home of being able to persuade people. But I do think in it, particularly when you look at foreign policy, it's a valid question. And it's important to understand the way in which, you know, he persists, he keeps going. He's never quite given up that hope that he might be able to be the one to persuade a foreign leader to behave in a different way.
Philippe, along with Macron's obviously healthy sense of his own magnificence, he does have an idea, an almost de Gaulle-ish idea, in fact, of old-school French grandeur. He thinks France should be impressive, that it should loom large. And it's been a distinguishing feature of his presidency that he's been extremely keen to project French military power abroad. How important is that to him in terms of what image he's trying to project of France?
Yes, I agree. Besides his tremendous self-confidence and self-belief we've just talked about now, an attempt to explain Macron's stand in foreign affairs is to look at the way he sort of positions himself very much in line with this traditional French way of seeing the world and seeing the place and role of France in the world, I think, which again comes from, of course, from Charles de Gaulle, his grandeur, as you said it. And this is typically French, and this is also why historically France has been seen as a fairly arrogant actor in world affairs. You know, this idea that this medium-sized, if not small country, which is no longer in a position economically, politically, to dictate anyone in the world what to do, is still arguing that, yes, indeed, France is a major political power in world affairs. And that's what he does, more or less. And I think he's very different from, I think you had De Gaulle was a one-off. De Gaulle started with this, as he said it himself, he had a certain idea of France, and his idea was that France would be and would remain an independent, fiercely independent actor in world affairs, and would have a role to play. You know, France's past, history, culture would make it an inevitable partner for anyone in world affairs. And I think that's what Macron wants to do. He wants to renew with this sort of a glorious past of France being seen. It remains to be seen whether it is actually true, but being seen at least as a sort of a major actor in world affairs.
Sophie, expanding on that point a little bit, is it possible that due to a confluence of current or upcoming events, Macron perceives a global moment for France looming here? France is obviously about to become the only country which is a member of NATO, the European Union, and a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Germany is about to enter the post-Merkel era. Does he think that now is a moment for France to lead the Western Hemisphere?
You know, up to a point, I think he thought that when he was elected already. You know, he was already anticipating, I think, sort of the end of the Merkel era and the rebirth of French leadership in Europe. And, you know, at various points during the last few years, we've sort of seen a lot of mockery of that. You know, France sort of having overreaching ambition, particularly when it came to Europe. But I think that in a sense, yes, I would agree with your question that I do think he sees this as a sort of moment for French leadership. But in a sense, he's actually got some reason to think that now. In particular, I'd add a further factor to your factors, and that's Brexit. You know, the loss of Britain, which he regrets, and, you know, it made him angry at the time, and I think he has actually been, you know, he does feel that there was a real risk with the loss of Britain, that it would fracture Europe and damage its reputation as a sort of, as a bloc in the world. But he also has seen it as an opportunity, and when we saw the deal that was done between France and Germany in July this year over a new recovery fund and lending, debt finance recovery fund, you know, there are reasons to see that France has actually managed to get to shift the argument, and not just the argument in Europe, but also the reality, you know, actually making things happen in the French direction, in Macron's way. So I think he definitely would see this as an opportunity for France to reassert its leadership. But I think he would see that this is something that's already happened and is happening and has done really accelerated because of Brexit and what that's done to unity among the other 27.
Sophie Pedder and Philip Marlier, thank you both very much for the moment. We will have more from you both later in the show. Of all of President Emmanuel Macron's foreign policy enterprises in recent times, none has been more eye-catching than his dramatic arrival in Lebanon in August, less than 48 hours after the colossal chemical explosion in Beirut's port. It was an extraordinary diplomatic gesture, a foreign head of state inviting themselves to someone else's national disaster. This is Leila Molana Allen, journalist and Monocle contributor in Beirut.
With a tidal wave of anger sweeping the country, President Macron stepped onto the shattered streets.
When Emmanuel Macron touched down in Beirut, he went straight to the people, as he put it. And he'd actually said just before he flew from Paris, he said, "I am coming first and foremost to see the Lebanese people, to give them solidarity and the promise of our continued friendship." At a time, of course, when everyone was extremely angry, even angrier than before, at the politicians after it was becoming clear that people had known about this ammonium nitrate stock. So he landed down and he went straight to Jemaisi in East Beirut, one of the worst damaged neighborhoods. Buildings collapsed everywhere, and he walked the streets with the people. He hugged people, he kissed them, he shook their hands. One woman started screaming at him, "Please don't give any money to these leaders. We don't trust them. They'll spend our money. They won't help us." And he looked at her and took her hand and said to her, I know that's how you feel.
"I'm here to bring help, to help to coordinate. We will launch a European and international initiative to bring money and help directly to people.
To people directly.
But at the other side, we have to launch a new political initiative to change in depth what is today at stake, because all this nervosity that you see, all this fear,
anger,
this anxiety,
real
this anger.
Anger
you have, is against politicians and against corruption in the country.
Everything is broken.
A lot of things."
It really was a show of, you know, absolutely wanting to engage with the people who'd suffered the most. So that really was the thrust of that first visit. Firstly, befriending directly the Lebanese people and wanting to speak to them and hear their concerns, and then taking that to politicians. That first visit of Macron was generally very well received by people. Of course, in Lebanon, there is often a lot of concern, somewhat rightly, about the involvement of foreign countries for so many years, using this as a bit of a political playing field. But certainly in terms of this specific visit, it did feel to some that he was coming as a savior, even just the show of compassion, the French being the first to send out aid very quickly. They sent out search teams. I was out with a French rescue team trying to dig people out of the rubble in the port just 2 days after the explosion. So when he came, people really did feel that he was putting his money where his mouth was and being willing to come down and do the dirty work of seeing the absolute devastation. Something that's quite important about Lebanon is that for some people, the attitude towards France as a former colonial power isn't quite as you'd expect it to be. There is a lot of love for France here among certain sectors of society, given that this is a country in which foreign powers have had so much influence and done so much damage over centuries. But the French attitude, partly because there is still a French education system here, partly because there's so many Lebanese living in France and so many French living here in Lebanon, so many people don't see it as such a colonial oppressor as perhaps you might see in other former colonies. Of course, it was actually a mandate here also rather than a colony. So to some people, they're seen more as having helped. But initially, what Emmanuel Macron was talking to leaders here about was trying to pushing them for that investigation that they swore would come through within 5 days.
I also hope, and it has been launched, that the investigations can be carried out as quickly as possible, in a perfectly independent framework, and with transparency, to report on what's happened, what the causes of the explosion are, because that is what is owed to all the victims and their families.
We still haven't properly seen the results of that, but also pushing them to let this foreign aid in, to immediately send money to people on the ground, and to start getting Lebanon moving in terms of the issues that were existing before the explosion, saying that we will, of course, now provide immediate aid relief, but we really will not just give you money now because this tragedy has happened. We need you to put in those reforms that we were calling for before. Initially, that was well received because people here felt that the government wasn't doing anything, was resting on their laurels, was hiding really behind closed doors while people suffered and had been for a while. And of course, we saw less than a week after the explosion, the government then stood down. But afterwards, it started to get a little bit tricky because what happened essentially was, for many people, Emmanuel Macron held hands with the devil because he decided that his strategy was that he was going to push for a new prime minister to be quickly nominated, and that new prime minister, who was Mustafa Adib, to then quickly put together a new cabinet. So he said when he came in the first week of August, I will be back and I want by then this to have happened. So there was a scramble and Mustafa Adib was nominated the new prime minister just a day before Macron got here. And then while Macron was here, he was pushing and saying, you must now form a cabinet very quickly. Now, many people felt that that was the wrong thing to do because by doubling down on the current parliament, the current political system, which is what so many people here feel isn't working and many have been protesting about for almost a year now, people felt that he was actually acting like a clueless Western leader, having said that he understood the Lebanese people, he understood their needs. This isn't what they wanted.
We only have seen friendly diplomacy. We have seen no sanctions, we have seen no pressure, we have just seen failed negotiations on the table.
So Adib was nominated. That then eventually didn't work because he was unable to get a cabinet together. Meanwhile, Macron is pushing and pushing and saying, I'm setting you these deadlines. He'd set a deadline for just a couple of weeks ago, and when by that point the cabinet had not come together, he made this blistering, shocking speech, Emmanuel Macron, essentially addressing Lebanese politicians as though they were children and saying, you know, I'm disappointed in you, you've let everyone down, you're behaving ridiculously.
The political forces in Lebanon have chosen to privilege their partisan and individual interests to the detriment of the general interests of the country. I note that they made the choice of handing Lebanon over to a game of foreign powers, condemning it to chaos instead of allowing it to benefit from the international aid that the Lebanese people need.
Now, it's not that the sentiments behind that weren't correct, but it was quite a shocking show and concerned a lot of people, the lack of respect in that discussion, because even though Emmanuel Macron has put himself forward as the saviour, He still is a leader of a sovereign state speaking to leaders of another sovereign state. And so to many people, that felt very infantilizing. So the fact that both he has backed the wrong horse, people feel, in pushing for the current political system to continue, and that he then behaved in this way has reduced his support among some parts of society here.
That was Leila Molana Allen in Beirut. You are listening to The Foreign Desk on Monocle 24. Still with me are Sophie Pedder and Philippe Marlier. In this part of the show, I want to try and explore Macron's foreign policy further by looking at a couple of specific examples. And Philippe, I'll ask you first. Obviously, for anybody who leads France, one of the trickier places, what with history and so on, to project French power and French influence is in France's former imperial dominions, especially in West Africa and in Algeria. Macron has, on a couple of occasions, rubbed both of those up the wrong way. But what's your sense of what he sees as France's role in those places where France was formerly the colonial occupier?
It's a very interesting question, because I think Macron's stand on this very sensitive issue of France's role in its former colonies, i.e. essentially in West Africa, in Maghreb, is quite ambivalent. On the one hand, it's very much in line with traditional French foreign policy. You know, we were once colonizers. We're no longer colonizers, of course, but we want still to keep very close ties with those countries, and of course for obvious economic, political and military reasons. For that, there's no change. I think they all did it. You know, Mitterrand, Chirac, Sarkozy were all in line with a sort of, again, very Gaullist way of looking at the former colonies and relationship with them. But I think there's also sort of been a number of occasions where Macron has acted very differently from his predecessors. And I think notably when it comes to the French colonial past, which hasn't been to date very much debated, at least in the media, in the French political class, even in terms of, you know, how this past is taught to youngsters in schools in France, you know, and particularly the very vexing, sensitive issue of Algeria. And I think on that, he's been the kind of liberal modernizer president that some hoped to find when he was elected 3 years ago. And then, for instance, if you take Algeria, he's been very, and the first president to acknowledge that, yes, France had misbehaved in Algeria, notably it's the military there. He was the one to formally acknowledge the widespread use of torture in Algeria, which no president before, including a left-wing president, Mitterrand, would have absolutely acknowledged. And he went as far as meeting the widow of Maurice Audin, who was a young, very well-known in France, young communist activist and FLN sympathizer, who was arrested, tortured and killed by the French military in Algiers. So that meeting was symbolically, in my opinion, very strong. And of course, you don't make yourself any friends by doing that, because of course, mainstream of the political class and also a lot of French media didn't like it. So from time to time, he surprises the people around him, but on the whole, I would say there's no change. It's very much the sort of traditional stand, you know, this used to be our colonies, we're no longer the colonizers, but we have vested interests there to defend, and I won't be any different from the previous presidents.
I mean, Sophie, we've also seen him taking a lead in places which are less obviously France's sphere of influence. Recently, obviously speaking up on behalf of those demonstrating against President Alexander Lukashenko in Belarus. He ordered naval craft and aircraft to Greece to make some sort of gesture of defense against Turkey in dispute over mineral rights in the Eastern Mediterranean. What do you think he sees his role there? Is he leading France? Is he asserting himself as the de facto leader of Europe, the Western world in general? Why does he think all of those things are his problem or his department?
Well, it's an age-old problem in France. Well, age-old, at least as far as the sort of post-war era under de Gaulle goes, and that's the tension between what is the French perception of the European interest and what's other Europeans' perception of the European interest. And that's a constant source of tension in French foreign policy making, not just under Macron, but I mean, it does underlie that. Macron very much wants to speak on behalf of Europe in his dealings in the near neighbourhood, and all those issues that you mentioned, the reason that he feels he has to intervene is that this is on Europe's doorstep, you know, to whether it's Turkey, Eastern Mediterranean, obviously even Lebanon, and certainly Russia, Belarus. These are issues that directly impact Europeans, and the stability of this region is a source of major concern. People around Macron are very worried when they look at the role that Turkey's playing, and obviously Russia is a longer running issue. But you know, if you look at Macron's behaviour elsewhere, or his the way in which he puts in place foreign policy, when he went to China last year, for example, he very much went trying to Europeanise his trip. He wanted to send a message that this wasn't just the French president speaking, but this was a European voice. He took with him a German minister, for example. He took with him a European commissioner as well. So I think that, you know, you have that constant tension, and sometimes it blows up. You know, it can be very difficult. Particularly Macron's Russia policy has caused a lot of anxiety in Baltic states and Eastern Europe, places that feel very much threatened by an assertive Russia. And Macron, when he makes comments like he did to The Economist last year, that he said that NATO was in a state of brain death, those countries in the east of Europe that rely on the North Atlantic security umbrella have felt extremely uncomfortable when Macron starts making those sorts of remarks. So one of the reasons he was in Lithuania recently was to try and calm those fears. He met with Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, the Belarus opposition leader, specifically to try and show that he wasn't just supporting a less Atlanticist and more sort of pro-Russian position. But, you know, his efforts to start up a strategic dialogue with Russia do make people uncomfortable there. And so I think there will be, and there always has been up to a point, this conflict or at least tension between what the French think is the European interest and what some of his fellow Europeans think it is.
Philippe, I know we have been talking about foreign policy here, and we will talk about foreign policy more shortly, but I'm just wondering if you think there's any part of Macron that figures that what he is doing in terms of foreign policy is necessary to the execution of his domestic policy. Now, the name of Charles de Gaulle has come up a few times already in this episode, funnily enough. And de Gaulle, as you probably know, once wrote that, and I quote, "France is not really herself unless in the front rank. Only vast enterprises are capable of counterbalancing the ferments of dispersal which are inherent in her people."
Yes, quite. But there are some differences between the two men. Different times, to start with. It was the start of the then EC, the first name given to the EU, and there was no such thing as, you know, the major powers were not together with the US, China or India. They were not at the time major political powers. So it's a different world, and France could still play this card of being allegedly or arguably even a major power. I think that's no longer the case. That's why I think you've got a number of people in France now saying, well, hang on, it's all very fine, this sort of activism on the world stage, but probably he should pay more attention to what goes on in France. There are big issues, economic, social. There is the COVID-19 crisis to sort. I think this is also another difference. At the time of De Gaulle was not very much a hands-on type of president. He would not get involved in day-to-day political affairs. He would concentrate on foreign affairs. Macron doesn't have this luxury now. He needs absolutely to step in on a regular basis and address the nation to speak about very mundane issues, you know, such as, you know, number of beds in hospital. I think De Gaulle would have never done that. And I think that's why I think it's a little bit of more difficult in a sense for Macron, and he shouldn't probably overstate his record or whatever he attempts to do on a world stage, because I don't think that will sort of consolidate his position for re-election.
Sophie, as a final thought, as Macron contemplates his geostrategic chessboard, might there be any part of him at all that is kind of hoping Donald Trump gets re-elected? Because there has been a gap, obviously, in American global leadership these last 4 years. Macron has clearly not been shy about urging France to fill that gap. Would he see a more re-engaged United States as a partner or perhaps even a rival?
He's somebody who's pragmatic, and he is an opportunist as well. And I would say that he will work with whichever American president is elected. And he's tried to do that with Trump. I don't think for a moment, although he could never say so, that he would want the re-election of Trump. But I also think that he doesn't date the disengagement of America from Europe and from interest in the North Atlantic Alliance to Trump. You know, he under Obama, we already saw that beginning to happen with the pivot to Asia. And I think that the French are very conscious of that. Macron, don't forget, was in the presidency working as an advisor to François Hollande at the time when Obama laid down the red line about use of chemical weapons in Syria and then in the end didn't act. And that stayed in Macron's mind. It was a very strong moment for him in understanding, I think, the use of threat and how you can't make empty threats. You have to be able to follow them through. So I don't think that they would be expecting, even under President Biden, for there to be a major shift in the sort of structural way in which the US relates to Europe. And equally, I don't think Macron himself is such a narcissist that he would see only a sort of downside to having a stronger American leadership on the global stage. You know, France finds itself often, when you talk to advisors at the Elysee, you find there's a sense of frustration that it's so difficult to find partners to work with at the moment. And, you know, at least he's trying. I mean, this is something that you feel all the time, that, you know, Brexit has made Britain pretty absent on the world stage. America is the same. Merkel is around, but not for so much longer. And I think the French need partners. They want partners, whether it's dealing in the near neighbourhood or further afield. So I think that the French would work well with the President Biden if that's the outcome. And Macron would be pragmatic enough to try and keep going despite all the difficulties that international relations present at the moment.
Sophie Pedder and Philip Marlier, thank you both very much for joining us. That's it for this episode of The Foreign Desk. We'll be back next week, and look out for The Foreign Desk Explainer, available every Wednesday. The Foreign Desk was produced and edited by Yolin Goffin and Christy Evans. Christy also produces The Foreign Desk Explainer. Special thanks this week also to Rhys James. From me, Andrew Muller, thanks very much for listening. Until next time, goodbye.